Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Is there a difference between the perfect body and the perfect body for you? Although you'd never know it from watching TV or reading fashion magazines, the average American woman is 5 feet 4 inches tall and weighs 142 pounds. But given that most models stand 6 inches taller than that and weigh 30 pounds less, a large number of white and Latina American teenagers report they are unhappy with their bodies. That dissatisfaction can lead to low self-esteem or even eating disorders. But what makes African American girls so much more tolerant of the wide array of shapes and sizes that the human body comes in? And is there a way to help all young women recognize that not everybody can fit within a thin ideal? My guests today have both researched those questions. Catherine Presnell is professor of psychology at SMU, and Camille Craplin is professor of journalism. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So what are the greatest influences on how a woman sees her body and how satisfied she is?
Well, I think that there really are three very important factors. I think the media is a very important factor, and I think that peers are very important as well. And then, of course, the family is an important factor, too. Those three things, have, most research bears out.
So you almost can't escape it.
No.
Whatever the influences are going to be. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I guess with peers, it's not even just a matter of your peers saying, you're fat. If you look at a peer and she's saying to herself, I'm fat or I don't like my body, then you have to look at your own body in a different way as well.
Exactly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of very subtle pressures that I think a lot of people don't realize get perpetuated in these ways. So even someone making a comment about somebody else puts pressure on individuals to evaluate their own bodies.
Certainly, obesity has never been the ideal in this country, but at what point did really thin women become our standard for what is beautiful?
Well, historically, there have been periods in our country when thin has been the real fashionable look. I think that if you look back at the flapper era, you know, during the flapper era, thin was very fashionable. And then that went out. And during the 50s, of course, we had Marilyn Monroe, you know, the hourglass shape, which was very popular. And then in the 1960s, as women's power became more more dominant, women became more powerful in terms of politics, in terms of, you know, moving up in the business world. And, of course, women's rights became an issue. We had Twiggy as the classic beauty, the model Twiggy. And so I think since then, as women's power has become even more and more of an issue, women have grown in many ways, politically, economically, it has remained.
And when you talk about Twiggy, that also means we're coming up on a second generation of women whose ideal has been very thin, as opposed to, you know, someone's mother saying, oh, you're fine. Now, a lot of these girls who are in their teens and 20s had mothers who grew up thinking they had to be rail thin in order to be attractive.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We're finding that parental influences on their daughters are certainly a big component of how adolescents feel about themselves.
What's interesting is that aside from the devastating and very real consequences of anorexia and bulimia, for most Americans, you know, our BMIs creep up every decade, and yet the standard remains the same. And so we're not necessarily changing our behaviors. We're just feeling worse and worse about who we are.
Absolutely. And in fact, we are actually seeing that echoed in some of the rates of eating disorders. Previously, it's predominantly been thought of as an adolescent phenomenon, and that remains true. But now we're seeing this generation of older women in their 40s and beyond who are really struggling with body image and eating issues as well.
What makes it so hard to cure an eating disorder?
Well, there are a lot of factors that contribute to eating disorders. A lot of them have to do with sociocultural influences from the media. And because a lot of these messages and this pressure to be thin is so ubiquitous that we really have a difficulty escaping the idea that we need to conform to that.
So what's the difference in perception between African-American young women and Latina or white young women? It's pretty extraordinary how differently they look at their bodies.
Well, it is an interesting question that we're still trying to answer. But what we found in our study was that the black young women, the African-American women that we interviewed were just much more confident about their bodies. And what we really determined was that it had a real strong cultural component, that the African American culture is just much more accepting of a rounder figure of a variety of shapes. And there was one girl in a focus group that I did that said, you know, I'm the tiniest one in my family. And you know, my cousins will always take me out and say, we're going to take you to KFC and we're going to make you eat. You know, they just
fatten her up.
We're going to fatten you up. We just they just have a sense that there's more of a focus in families and among peers that a broader range of bodies is beautiful. You know, not just the thin ideal that you can be a variety of you can be beautiful being a variety of different shapes.
How does participation in organized sports affect the way women feel about themselves?
I think that for a lot of girls, this gives them an outlet for viewing their bodies in a different way, as something that is functional rather than just something that is based in appearance. And so for many girls, I think it gives them a source of self-esteem to participate in sports, and it serves as a sort of protective factor against some of these body image concerns and eating disordered behaviors that we see.
You almost hate to ask this question, or I do, but how much of the way women feel about their bodies is related to the way we assume men feel about our bodies?
Oh, absolutely. I think most women are most concerned not only with what they think, but certainly with what their dating partners, men in their mm-hmm. lives think. And many women have a misconception about what men truly want women to look like. And this has been shown in the literature that women habitually choose an ideal figure that's much smaller than what men say is their ideal.
And so we literally are, many women want to be thinner than their partner or their boyfriend or whatever would want them to be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And is the sort of matriarchal culture in the African American community, does that also play into the whole idea? If women are making more of the decisions, does that mm-hmm. sort of protect women?
I believe it does. That women, as powerful women, taking up more space, that does, I think, for young girls, it gives them a sense of a role model, per se. And so they're used to larger, powerful women being in control. And again, that's just one more role model, another person to look at who is representative of a beautiful woman, a strong woman, that does not match the thin ideal that we put in the magazines as the only model that one can model oneself after.
Of course, the people who are writing these magazines and publishing them say, we try featuring regular women, and if you put one of them on the cover, we don't sell magazines. We sell magazines mm-hmm. with the most, I don't want to say the thinnest, but the woman that is most perceived as the most beautiful person needs to be on the cover.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's actually some research that came out this past year that showed that what really sells magazines is attractiveness. And the problem with that is that the women, the larger women that they put in magazines, are not viewed as attractive. And attractiveness is usually based off of facial appearance. And that they actually did a very clever study where they took two models and showed them in an advertisement as a size 2 model and then photoshopped them into a size 12 model. And the participants made no distinction between size. It was really level of attractiveness between the women that made the difference in their desire to purchase the product.
One thing that I thought was interesting, and we'll talk about the Body Project in a minute, but one of the first points that you make is that these magazines exist. Their job is to tell women there's something wrong with them so that mm-hmm. they can open up the magazine and find 15 ways to solve it by buying this dress or that workout tape or those bars.
Yeah. And I think going back to what Catherine said just a moment ago, there's a very strong influence on these magazines, and those are the folks who buy ads in those magazines. And of course, they may, you know, it may be true that that appearance is most important, but they want to sell clothing, and they do believe that their clothing looks best on a size zero. So they want a size zero on the cover, and they have a strong influence on the publisher of the magazine, because who puts the most ads in those magazines? It's going to be people who sell clothing, of course. You know, I think I've done a content analysis on Vogue magazine, and I think about 70% of the ads in Vogue magazine are for couture clothing. And so they have a very, you know, they play a very important role. And they have almost total say over what goes into that magazine.
So there's Vogue magazine, and then there's Ebony magazine, and you have found that women who read just Vogue are much more likely to have a problem than women who read both.
Well, what I found, again, is that there is almost a protective factor regarding these young African-American women. And when they are within their own culture, again, that culture that seems to value a wider understanding of what is beautiful and a more voluptuous body, they seem to be protected against eating disorders. There's a much lower rate of eating disorders among African-American women. And so if they are reading Ebony, Essence, all these magazines directed toward African-American women or just African-Americans, that seems to keep them within that culture. And the women that I interviewed were avid readers of these magazines, whereas the Latina women that I interviewed didn't read any magazines that were directed toward a Latino audience or toward a Hispanic audience at all. They were avid readers of more mainstream magazines like 17 or People that really were just, you know, again, perpetuating the thin ideal. And so they didn't have any protection, anything that was culturally relevant to them.
And this is also borne out in the literature that African-American girls will endorse a larger body size as their ideal as compared to white girls. And this does seem to serve a sort of protective factor for them, but may predispose them to other problems such as obesity.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that, sort of the line between saying accept your body for what it is because there's only so far you can go, and also needing to reinforce the message that you have to stay reasonably fit to be healthy.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you do with that?
That's an important point. And again, I think we have to get back to the point Catherine made earlier about health, whether it's, you know, trying to stay away from becoming too thin or becoming overweight. We have to focus on health and what makes people feel good, which is exercise and eating right. It's going to make people feel good. It's going to make them look good without either extreme.
And I think there's a common misconception about if we move away from this thin ideal, then are we promoting this ideal of obesity and that overweight is acceptable and healthy?
So we're not resetting the ideal to be very, very large.
No, we're resetting it to be healthy.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We're talking about body image and the media and the way that women are influenced to think about themselves with Catherine Presnell. She is professor of psychology at SMU, and also Camille Craplin, who's professor of journalism at SMU. You can join our conversation after the break, and you can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and travel start in March. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris. Chris Boyd. We're talking today about women and body image with Camille Crapeland, who's professor of journalism at SMU, and Catherine Presnell, who's professor of psychology at SMU. You can join our conversation today by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. So, Catherine, tell me about the Body Project. It sounds so simple that it almost shouldn't work.
Absolutely. Well, it's really based on this idea that women have been socialized to attain the thin ideal, this image that's projected in the media that emphasizes slenderness, being ultra slim. And what we've done is created a way of attitude change that really is based on a theory of cognitive dissonance. And what that is basically when people hold two discrepant beliefs or attitudes, that creates psychological discomfort that we're motivated to resolve. And one way to do that is to change your attitude. And so the whole idea behind the Body Project is really to get girls to critically evaluate this thin ideal and really look at some of the costs associated with pursuing the ideal with the intention of helping them shift their attitudes away from that.
So you bring them in once a week for a month and you say, just for tonight, just pretend that you agree with what we're talking about. Is that sort of the idea?
Yes and no. It's really not based on trying to persuade them to adopt a new perspective, but really getting them to speak up and voice some of the problems and concerns that go along with pursuing the thin ideal. So we would have them, for example, talk about some of the costs to their self-esteem, to themselves, to society that go along with pursuing the thin ideal. And they really argue themselves out of it.
We've been talking mostly about women this hour, and I know that's where both of you have your research based, but I'm wondering if the use of steroids in young men tells us that the problem is no longer just women.
Absolutely. This is a growing problem among boys, and I think that one of the misconceptions about body image is that it's just for girls. But boys, certainly we're seeing a growing problem among boys with their body dissatisfaction, and they really are held to a different ideal, not just the thin ideal, but they're held to a muscular ideal. Not only do they have to be trim, but they also have to be very muscular, and that this really does set them up for a different set of problems, such as steroid use.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org. Let's speak to Chris in Dallas. Hi, Chris.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm the father of two little girls, a three-year-old and a 16-month-old, and I love these little girls. And I think about the society in which they live and all the pressures they're going to be facing. And I'm wondering what I can do as a dad to really help shape my daughter's view of themselves and their bodies in a very healthy way. Paying a toll here, sorry.
I got to stay legal. Well, I think we've probably got your question, I think Chris said it's a great one.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, first of all, you can encourage anything that they love to do and praise them for their attributes other than their physical attributes. And encourage those things. Encourage, encourage, encourage. Don't praise them for how pretty they are. Don't praise them for their physical attributes. Praise them for their character. Praise them for their talents. And encourage their talents. The best thing you can do is to keep them occupied with things they love through adolescence. That's the rocky period where a lot of girls really struggle with things like eating disorders if they're going to have their first problems with things like eating disorders. I think the most common period of onset is a little bit later, but often they have their first trouble with things like eating disorders a little bit earlier at the time of puberty. So keep them busy with things they love and don't compliment them first on their physical attributes, even though you think they're adorable. Try not to compliment those things first.
It is okay to say, you know, if somebody's in a special dress, it's okay to say,
yes,
that looks great on you, just not, you're such a pretty girl.
Yes, and especially not all the time. Mm-hmm. Don't focus on those things. Try to focus on, I'm so proud of you for telling the truth. I'm so proud of you for being such a nice person to your friends. Focus on those things.
I would echo that sentiment, just helping build their self-esteem that's based on more than just their appearance. Absolutely.
The fact that this tends to arise in early adolescence, I'm wondering if there's a link between girls' really ambivalent feelings about their own sexuality and about their bodies changing, in addition to all the other pressures around them.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. We see a dramatic rise in the incidence of eating disorders around puberty, partially because puberty moves girls farther away from the thin ideal. So now it becomes much more difficult to approximate that ideal that they see in the media.
Suddenly they have hips and breasts.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this becomes a very difficult time for them. And we actually see the opposite in boys. The going through puberty actually moves them closer to their ideal. So that's why we see this big discrepancy showing up really in adolescence. And for some, there can be concerns about maturity and becoming a sexual being that promote that as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had the great question from Chris about keeping his daughters emotionally healthy. Are there things that parents do accidentally beyond just praising their daughters for their beauty, maybe inadvertently, that end up causing a lot of damage?
Absolutely. That's what we call fat talk. And these are subtle ways that the thin ideal gets perpetuated in ways that parents and friends really don't even realize. So this would include things like saying, wow, do I look fat in this? Or, gosh, you know, Susan's really gained weight over the holidays. Or even just complimenting someone for weight loss that subtly reinforces the idea that it's important to be thin. Even though we perceive it as something positive, that's the message that gets across.
Or obsessing about our own weight, too. Mm-hmm. I think that young women pick up immediately when their own mothers or perhaps their fathers are always on diets or are always obsessing about their own weight. I've done focus groups with very young girls who come and tell me, oh, my mom, she's always on a diet. She's always checking her weight on the scale. They're very cognizant of that. And so if mom is always obsessed about her weight, well, it's very natural for the daughter to become obsessed about her weight as well.
So it's one thing to steer the girls away from magazines and things that are not good for them and to try to change the way we feel. Is it too late for mom? Is it too late for the woman who is, you know, now the mother of a teenage girl that really hasn't got her mind around feeling good about her own body?
It's never too late. And one of the best things that a parent can do for their child is model that healthy, positive body image for them.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Travis in Dallas. Hey, Travis.
Hi. I'd like to make a comment that goes along the lines of something like, you know, in our society right now, we're more obese than we've ever been. And I'm not trying to say that we should be encouraging this obsession about body type and looking good, but we also want to encourage our children to be fit. And I think there's a balance to be struck between, you know, we don't want you to obsess about your weight so much as to encourage exercise and eating properly. And I think there's a balance to be struck there. And I was wondering if you might comment on those thoughts.
Thanks for your call.
Absolutely. And we would agree with that it's important to embrace a healthy ideal as opposed to the thin ideal. And so many people think moving away from a thin ideal means embracing being overweight or obese as healthy. And we're not suggesting that. What we're saying is that we need to focus on health and in doing those sorts of healthy behaviors, eating well, exercising on a regular basis, as opposed to trying to attain a particular look by any means possible.
1-800-933-5372 is the telephone number. Our email address is think@kera.org. Mark from Garland writes, as a man of color, I noticed when I dated Caucasian women, they had more body image problems than women of color. Are eating disorders and body image issues primarily an American issue? And generally, is it men or women magazine editors pushing the thin ideal?
I think that it's probably female magazine editors who are pushing the thin ideal. Again, I don't think men are really as concerned about 10 extra pounds. They want a woman who is confident about her body. Primarily, they like a woman who has sex appeal. They like a woman who is pretty and who is healthy. I think that often, and I this was echoed in some of the focus groups that I did, that when I say we, I'm talking about women, we
try to be thin more for other women than we do for men. And it's, I think, female editors who are setting the rules about what is chic and what is not. And with the help of designers and those people who are selling the ads.
You know, ironically, the one place that you'll sometimes see the, you know, the curtain fall away is in the tabloids. And then it's on the one hand sort of comforting at the checkout to see that Sharon Stone has cellulite like many other people. And then on the other hand, she's really humiliated. You have the sense, oh, thank God that wasn't me they were taking a photo of at the beach. And so it's really, it's almost just as bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that we have to remember with the thin ideal is that so much of what we see in magazines is so very false. Not only are these people prepped with makeup and hair, you know, people who do their hair, who do their makeup, but then they have computer retouching in every photograph that's taken of them that goes into a magazine. The photos that actually come out look almost nothing like the original person.
Exactly. And that's one of the big problems with the thin ideal is that even the supermodels really aren't attaining the thin ideal. It's a nearly impossible measure to measure up to. And so this really sets people up for failure.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting when you see one of them interviewed in a magazine, they'll always talk about what they eat. And 9 times out of 10, they'll say, I don't really watch what I eat. I love cheeseburgers just like you do. And I wonder what the message that a teenage girl gets from that is, well, gosh, how come it's magically happening for this woman and not for me?
It is a very confusing message, isn't it? And we go back.
I don't know that it's true, by the way. I think they're all lying.
Yeah, yeah. They usually have personal chefs as well. And again, we have to remember these people, the celebrities. They have personal chefs. They have personal trainers. It is their job to look good, and they spend a lot of money making sure that they do look good. And then back again to the pictures that are nothing like what they actually really look like without the makeup, without all those hours spent primping, and then the hours spent retouching those photos.
Somebody pointed out to me once that they're as much a genetic aberration as anything else. If you happen to be born, you know, 5'11" and you can weigh 125 pounds somehow, that's just a matter of genes in many cases.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there's a saying that I like that is, there are 3 billion women who don't look like supermodels and only 8 who do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org. Let's go next to Nancy in Dallas. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm a mother of 3 teenage daughters, and they're always saying how fat their thighs are and everything. And it's like, no, their thighs aren't fat. And they go to a school that's very hard on appearance. And my daughter was going down the hall, and someone yelled at her that she needed to go on a diet, and she doesn't need to go on a diet by any stretch of the imagination. And so she wrote a poem. She's in a slam poetry club that she started last year, and she wrote a poem about how she's just curvy, and the other girl just has anorexic legs, or Holocaust legs, I think she said. And I have a problem with weight. I've had 3 C-sections, and so my middle isn't too good. But I try to watch what I eat and exercise, but I'm going through this online dating, and all the people on there seem to want the beautiful model, blonde, you know, svelte-looking woman, and so I just have a hard time with that. So that's what I wanted to say. Thanks.
Thanks for your call, Nancy. You know, I'm wondering how much men have been influenced by what they see in the media. In other words, men might have found a woman with 10 or 20 more pounds than the ideal, very attractive, but then they see enough models in magazines, and then they start to believe that what they believe is attractive needs to be shaved down a little bit.
Absolutely. Men are not immune to the effects of media as well.
I agree. I think they are very much influenced by the media, and they think that they should be with someone who looks like Beyonce Knowles or Cameron Diaz.
Mm-hmm. At least Beyonce Knowles has some curves.
Exactly.
An email from Liza says, I grew up here and have lived in other parts of the country as well as Mexico City. Dallas isn't like other places. It's a brutal place to live when it comes to being beautiful, slender, perfect looking, not to mention a powerful woman. Is your research or are your assertions limited to a place like Dallas? And she points out the fact that plastic surgery here is so very common.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that the effects of the subculture in which you live certainly play a huge role just within the city and even, as the last caller indicated, it within a school, for example. And this is going to vary from place to place. But overall, we're still seeing the same kinds of problems across the country.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Dana in Irving. Hi, Dana.
Hi. I love the show. This is wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
I had a couple of quick comments and I would like some feedback. My own personal issue, real quickly, I'm in my 40s now, and my father, when he was alive, he always had an issue with my weight, even when I go back and look at pictures and I wasn't heavy. And I think it stemmed from health. He didn't want me to get, you know, like diabetes or something like serious like that. But even in my 40s, he would call, "Hi, how you doing? How are the grandkids? What's your weight?"
Wow.
I mean, you know, I mean, it was that bad. And I kind of wanted to look at how men really do affect. I heard the father was on how men really do affect, you know, a woman's opinion of herself. But also, we were talking, you were talking about the health and the children and how to encourage them. Maybe if we put more emphasis on, you know, what's your blood pressure, you know, and what's your, you know, different ways to categorize this other than what, you know, what's your weight and what's your measurements, you know, for these kids, because now everything is so, you know, hyper in the media and the schools and everything about our health, because we do have a health crisis, you know, for overweight kids, and I relate to that. But remembering how pressured I was as a child, it concerns me so much about these kids are all going to grow up, and you know, yeah, it's great to get them out and exercise, but they're all pressured, you know, now not to weigh more than a few pounds, you know, over an ideal, and that, you know, and that concerns me.
Dana, those are great points. We will get a response after we come back from this quick break. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. The email address is think@kera.org. We're talking about health and body image and how the two relate to each other.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and travel start in March. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. SMU Professor of Journalism Camille Craplin and Professor of Psychology Catherine Presnell are here. We're talking about body image. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Before the break, the caller was talking about still remembering things that her father said to her when she was younger, and the idea that maybe we could switch our focus over to boasting about our blood pressure and asking those sorts of questions of each other.
Absolutely. I think the key really is shifting the cultural preoccupation with thinness and appearance to a cultural preoccupation with health and really engendering some of those healthy behaviors.
I have an email here from Lisa who says she has a 4- and 5-year-old daughter. Sometimes they ask, "Mommy, if I eat this, will it make me fat?" I never discuss it with them, so I don't know if they overhear teachers or if peers discuss weight. Their school is very affluent, and I don't know how to react when they talk about such things. Is there a healthy way to respond to their questions and comments about calories and using the word fat without using the word fat as an insult?
Absolutely. I think that one of the big mistakes that a lot of parents make is not paying attention to what their kids are eating at a young age, and they only become concerned once their kids begin to become overweight or obese, and then they start telling them, "Oh, you can't eat that. That's not good for you." And so I think focusing really on what is good to put in their bodies, what's healthy for them, starting at a young age, really can circumvent some of those problems.
And I think a larger discussion might be in order, too, just where, you know, who is discussing this? What, you know, why are you concerned about calories? Why are you concerned about fat? That might be in order as well, to really help them understand that they really don't need to be concerned about calories and fat at this point. In terms of overeating, They just need to be worried about eating in a healthy manner. That's all they need to be worried about.
I would imagine that in your research, both of you have come upon this question. What do you do with a young person? Let's assume a young adult here. We'll take children out of the picture. Who is significantly overweight, mm-hmm. who might actually have health issues, but you don't want that person to feel horrible about herself, particularly if she's unable to lose the weight for whatever reason. How do you sort of get around body image when there is a problem?
Mm-hmm. I think one way to do that is shift the focus from numbers on a scale to really the types of behaviors that they're doing. So if someone is eating in a healthy way, exercising on a regular basis, and putting the focus there, then that really is helpful in terms of getting them out of that mindset of I have to achieve a certain weight or a certain dress size in order to be where I need to be.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause that can be a real dangerous mindset, I think, for a lot of people. But if you teach them the way to live, that is sustainable.
Yes. Yeah, so focusing on the behaviors rather than the outcome.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Rachel in Dallas. Hi, Rachel.
Hello there. Good afternoon. I live here in Dallas. I've been living in this country 12 years. I'm originally from Ireland. And I noticed when I've lived in Chicago, I've lived in Dallas, and I lived in different parts of Europe, and I started a food business about 4 years ago. Now, as I travel around the country, I have just, in fact, been in Minneapolis last weekend, and we talk about food and do cooking classes. And what I'm noticing, and I'm a mother, too, of two boys, is that we're not celebrating food. And, you know, you talk about it being cultural aspects. I go for dinners here with people in Dallas, with friends, and it never ceases to amaze me that, you know, as somebody goes to reach for a potato or something extra or a piece of bread, there has to be a comment that is accompanies it, like, oh, this is extra calories, this is going straight to my hip. And quite frankly, it ruins my meal because just stop. You know, you need to just eat your food, sit there, enjoy it, and, you know, savor what somebody's made for you, you know, and it becomes a celebration. It's not, food is not, was never meant to be something that was so bad for us. And this session here in Dallas is quite phenomenal to me. It really, really is. Because you can eat really good food and not really get terribly heavy. Does that make sense to anybody?
It does. Rachel, can I ask you a question before we let you go? You said that you've lived in the U.S. for 12 years, and originally you're from Ireland and you lived around
yes.
Europe. We've heard that until very recently, the rates of overweight and obesity were much lower in Europe. Do you think that's a factor of the sort of the way we approach food in this country?
Yes, I do. Well, I've never, you know, I'm one of four children born and raised in Cork in Southern Ireland. And the way we ate and the way we talked, you know, food was not discussed as it was not a bad thing, okay? And then as I lived in France for a while. And like I said, food was a reward. It was a celebration. It was a way of, you look at the slow food movement in this country, which is phenomenal and very involved with it here in Dallas. And it is a promotion of lifestyle that you sit at the table, eat your meal whilst you're discussing other things. You're not discussing the topic of the food going to your hips and the calories. And I'm very worried about it. I have a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old boy who have said to me that they are listening to the girls talking about their weight in school, and so they're coming and asking me. So, you know, I'm Irish, my husband's English, and we're trying to raise them, you know, in a culture that is deeply obsessed with food. I do culinary classes when I'm going around to the stores. And I did them, like I said, in Minneapolis last weekend. People were celebrating and loving it. In Dallas, the women, it's a task. I'm telling you, it's a task to try and get them.
Rachel,
you know.
Yeah, I really appreciate your call. Thank you so much for your perspective on this.
Okay.
You know, it is interesting that we've always had plenty of food in this country. We certainly like to eat. Apparently, we just don't like the way eating makes us feel or what we think about when we eat.
I'm afraid there's too much emphasis on eating to excess here and not enjoying smaller amounts of really good fresh food. And that does seem to be an American dilemma.
Absolutely. And with the obesity on the rise, I think we've really become a fat phobic and food phobic culture.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Shane in Fort Worth. Hi, Shane.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'm a father of a 19-year-old freshman in college. She was diagnosed 2 years ago with an eating disorder, And we've gotten to the point where we're looking at rehab facilities and inpatient, and there's outpatient, and we're trying to figure out the differences and also the success outcomes of the two. That's my question.
Thanks for your call.
Absolutely. Sorry to hear about your daughter. This is a growing problem that a number of women are dealing with, and unfortunately, less than a quarter of individuals with an eating disorder ever receive treatment, and of those, less than half experience lasting symptom alleviation. So it really is a problem. I think there are a number of good facilities out there. We're still working towards developing more effective treatments, but right now there are several very good ones that are in existence. And as far as the difference between inpatient and outpatient, part of that decision will be based on her medical stability as to what would be the most appropriate approach there. And that can really be done in collaboration with the providers.
And how often is it sort of a combination of both, that someone would go to an inpatient facility and then have pretty extensive outpatient therapy afterward?
Yes. Always, if someone is in inpatient treatment, we would want to follow them up with outpatient treatment, because oftentimes the length of time that they're in inpatient treatment just isn't enough to really get them recovered from the disorder. It's often a lifelong struggle.
1-800-933-5372 is the telephone number. Let's go next to Esther in Dallas. Hi, Esther.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
The one thing that I haven't heard discussed or mentioned, and I just want to make a comment here, I gained weight, a lot of it. I've had cancer several times, and the steroids and the medications I was on put 100 pounds on me, and I'm working it off, but it takes forever. And I can relate to people who are overweight. I've never been overweight in my life. I used to be a long-distance runner, but I can relate to them. People look at you, and they judge you. They don't judge you by your wit, your charm, how funny you are, how sexy you are. They judge you by the person they're looking at. You are overweight. The reason this bothers me is I'm single. I'm on some dating sites. And I've realized after being on these sites that you actually have to get these men interested in how funny you are, how sexy you are online, and how cute you can be. Then you present them with your body. You can't be truthful and honest and meet them somewhere first and get to know them. You have to get to know them online to feel comfortable with presenting yourself to them physically. And I find that intimidating. I can understand how ladies get an inferiority complex and are intimidated by this. It's very demeaning, and you shouldn't have to go through all of that. But that's my comment.
Thanks very much for your call. Thanks.
You're welcome.
I think that's the one of the remaining groups that it's still okay in our culture to really discriminate against is the overweight. I mean, there have been movies about that very thing. It's very acceptable to discriminate against overweight people, and I think people do it every day.
Certainly, I think that working towards reducing the stigma associated with overweight mm-hmm. and obesity is an important goal. It's unfortunate that we do live in a society in which we are judged in large part by our appearance. And I think really focusing on other aspects of yourself that are positive, that you mm-hmm. like, can help circumvent the effects of some of that.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Linda, who writes to say that there's a play opening April 11th at the Dallas Children's Theater called Eat, It's Not About Food. They're partnering with the ELISA Project and Girls to Women Health and Wellness Medical Practice, and they look at eating disorders in both girls and boys. So something to look up. We can put a link to it on our website.
Fantastic.
Our email address is think@kera.org. Phone number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's try Robin next in Dallas. Hi, Robin.
Hi. I was a little bit surprised about some of the comments on the children and very alarmed, because I do tell my daughter, who's six, quite frequently how pretty she is. And I was like, wow, there's a place that we can go to read up on this, how to stop some of that subtle stuff from going into our children's brain.
There's a classic book called Reviving Ophelia, which I would always recommend. And it really it talks a lot about how you can help your daughter transition survive that really important transition into adolescence. And so I would highly recommend that.
Absolutely. There's a number of excellent websites that you can go to for more information about this, including the National Eating Disorders Association, and a number of programs to help build children's self-esteem, programs such as Body Positive and things like that.
Let's speak next to Tracy in Fort Worth. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just completed my dissertation on a topic this. I looked at the linguistics of how we talk about body issues in magazines, in women's fitness magazine. And what I found is that there's actually two issues. The first is this beauty ideal and this idea of being a natural feminine woman. And then there's this second issue, which is about achievement and empowerment and taking control, making change. And so women are sort of confronted on two levels about having this beauty ideal. There's the femininity, naturalness, quote-unquote naturalness, of having this body type. And then there's the empowerment issue of taking charge of your body and making these changes. And I think that women are really hit with these two issues. I'd like to hear the speaker's comment on that.
Thanks for calling. Congratulations on the dissertation.
Thank you.
I think the dissertation sounds really fascinating, and I am not surprised that these magazines are telling us to do two really, from what it sounds like, two very different things. We have to be beautiful, and that's of paramount importance. But at the same time, we're expected to go out there and take over the world. But we'd better look good while we're doing it, right? I think that at least, you know, 30 years ago, we wouldn't have seen anything in most of these magazines about empowerment. We would have only seen editorial copy about looking good. So there has been some progress. It would be my comment.
Absolutely. And I think, too, that this focus on not only being attractive but being successful is often difficult for a lot of women to balance, trying to be, you know, everything all at once. And I think that puts extra pressure on women.
Catherine Presnell is professor of psychology at SMU, and Camille Craplin is professor of journalism. It's been great to have both of you with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.